to the Fit and Fabulous podcast with Dr. Jamie Seaman.
Hello, everybody. It's Dr. Jamie. Welcome back to the Fit and Fabulous podcast. I'm so glad that you're tuning in with us today. Thanks to everybody that has downloaded the previous episodes, checked them out. We've had some really awesome, incredible guests on. Every time you download, you leave reviews, you help us spread the awareness and messages all over the world. So please do that. Please share this with your family and friends that you think it might be interesting to. And we love and appreciate you all so much. So on today's episode, I am super excited. This guy and I have been trying to connect our crazy schedules for a while, and it's finally happened. I would like to introduce you all to Matt Maruca to the Fit and Fabulous podcast. Matt, I'm so glad you're here.
Thanks so much for having me, Jamie. I'm glad to be here.
So Matt, tell people who you are, because I think your story is incredibly unique. And then we're going to talk about your business and everything you do, because we're going to dive into light, you guys, light today. We're talking about light.
Yeah. Thanks again. I really appreciate the opportunity to join you here. So, hey, everybody. So my name's Matt Maruca, as you said, and I'm a guy who is very lucky, I would say, to have been blessed with some really interesting circumstances in my life that led me to seek to understand the role that light plays in building health and wellness, or contrarily, in destroying health and wellness. And that all came about when I was a young kid and I started having a variety of digestive issues, allergies, all these types of things that I accepted were genetic and that I couldn't do anything about them. Fast forward several years later, it was the beginning of high school, and I started getting really bad breakouts of acne, and I really wanted to fix that. And I thought maybe that diet would be a way to do that for whatever reason, because my mother was thankfully oriented towards healthy eating already and these types of things. But I never thought that food could actually affect my physiology in the way I felt. It just never really crossed my mind. And in the same way that light, the fact that light could affect my health had never crossed my mind and still hasn't crossed most people's minds, which is why I'm speaking here today. But this was amazing. When I started researching, I came across the paleo diet, and I was really astounded by something I read about this concept called epigenetics, that we could actually modify our genetic expression, in theory, changing our health and even becoming superhuman just by modifying environmental factors. And then our genes didn't mean our destiny. I thought that was a really inspiring concept that really gave me hope for my future. And not only that I could clear my acne and clear my skin, but actually that I could be healthy, well, whole, and even to a certain degree, superhuman. You know, how far could I go became the question in health and wellness and vitality. And so I went far down the food rabbit hole because the author's erroneous conclusion, even though the premises about epigenetics were on point, that we could really modify our life with our environmental inputs, the conclusion was that food was 80%. And I really believed it. And I went all in with that belief, kind of like a science experiment, testing it, stricter diets. And whereas according to that hypothesis, the stricter my diets would be, the healthier I should have gotten, the stricter my diets was, the sicker I got. The worse I felt, the more strict I was, the more harsh, the more intolerant of myself and my own mistakes I became, and the more miserable I became, and the sicker I became concurrently. And so thank God I was blessed to come across certain researchers, bloggers who were attempting to sort of cast a line to save people who were going down that obsessive dieting path and saying, hey, there's actually more to health and wellness than just diet. Now, this was a very niche kind of community at the time and niche thinkers, but saying, hey, there's much more. And it actually turns out that it's centered around a part of our body called the mitochondria, our cellular engines, the engines that produce energy in our body. They convert food into useful energy that basically can do everything in the body. And the idea that struck me was mainly that because our mitochondria process our food, like a car's engine processes gasoline to make energy and make the pistons fire and make the car move, if the mitochondria in our cells were for whatever reason dysfunctional, there would be no possible way that eating a healthier diet could fix that fundamental issue, because it's caused by something else other than the fuel that's going in. In the same way that if a car's engine were totally dysfunctional, putting in premium gas isn't going to fix it. You have to take it to the mechanic. If the spark plugs are worn out, you need to take it to a mechanic and replace the spark plugs. But so I learned that many people, myself included, were trying to heal diseases of dysfunctional mitochondria by changing the fuel going in, just like trying to fix a broken car engine by changing its gasoline quality. It doesn't really go all the way. It doesn't mean that food doesn't have a huge impact on health. It actually does, but it just isn't the be all end all that I was led to believe. And I specifically started to learn, well, what affects mitochondria? What affects how our engines work? And it was interesting to even understand that it was in theory that if our engines worked really, really well, we could be healthier on lower quality food than someone who had really poor functioning engines with premium gas. Perfect example would be a Nissan Sentra running on premium gas versus a Lamborghini on regular. The Lamborghini is going to beat the Nissan a million times over.
What you got against Nissan?
Nothing in particular. It's just an example, yeah. You know, that I've heard others use, and I actually don't know much about cars. So maybe there's a better car. Someone could comment and let me know, because I don't know.
Tells me you don't even own a car. I feel like Matt Maruca walks everywhere.
Yeah. And I do have a car. I have a cool, nice little SUV for getting around with a surfboard in California, but I'm never there. So anyway, so this is a really interesting idea. And it turned out, of all the things I learned, that energy, specifically light and electromagnetism, has the biggest impact on our mitochondrial health, specifically on these things called circadian rhythms, which is our body's clock. And so when I learned this, it became clear that it was a better use of my energy to focus on how to optimize that, seeing as to the fact that I was a young guy in high school. I was constantly on screens and technology. I grew up watching TV more than playing outdoors. I had all the signs and symptoms of what I was learning is called blue light toxicity, when you have too much blue light. And it's just like if you're mercury toxic because you eat too much mercury. The wavelengths of light are like vitamins and minerals that affect our physiology differently. And blue isn't bad. Blue is actually really good and very important from the sun. But all of our screen devices and lights have too much blue, especially at the wrong time of day. So ultimately, I ended up starting a business making blue light protection eyewear, these glasses. Now, I'm not wearing them because I have this huge open scene right now looking out to the ocean, and I don't want to block out the full spectrum sunlight. There you go.
There's no oceans in Nebraska.
Yeah, exactly. And we should get you, if you don't already have them, we need to get you a pair of the yellow ones for the day, because those are more, these ones will put you to sleep, the night ones.
Yeah, we're going to talk about these glasses, but because these suckers will put me to sleep. So.
So that's how I got interested in this. That's how I ended up doing what I'm doing, running a business and going around the world and teaching people about light and working with a lot of really cool people.
Okay, so tell me how you started. Like when you get in this group and everyone's talking about mitochondria, like where did you figure out that light was a really missing factor for you and a lot of people?
So it was really, I couldn't take the credit. It was some of the researchers I was following who sort of put this information out. And one guy in particular I give a lot of credit to, named Dr. Jack Kruse. He's a very, very genius neurosurgeon. So surgeons in general have to be very precise, and they have to know that they're right or know when they're not right. And not to say that he's right about everything, but extremely intelligent guy who put together a lot of the pieces here. Very strong character, strong personality, which can come off to some as off-putting. But if you can, you know, see beyond that, you can learn a ton. And so I learned a lot of great information from this man and from many other researchers in this kind of world he was even pointing to a lot of them. And so the biggest takeaways as the pieces started to come together, you know, as I was reading more and more, was that it's really important for us to first, I should actually share about how the sun and how light affects our body in more detail, because then people can actually have
Let's
a
meaningful talk about how it affects the biology. And for obviously the people listening and don't have a degree, like, you know,
of course,
physiology, like dumb it down so my 10-year-old can understand it.
Yeah, it's super simple. So the best way to dumb it down, if we were to say that, although I think your audience is probably quite intelligent, is that the sun,
Fit and Fabulous.
Yeah, there we go. Exactly. The sun, it's a great name, by the way. The sun, you know, so how does a plant make life? How does a plant come into existence? We learn early on in our education that photosynthesis is how plants take light from the sun and turn it into sugar and into useful energy, and they sustain their life. And all food that we consume on Earth starts through photosynthesis as food, or then an animal that ate a plant. But ultimately, that means that all of the food that we're consuming goes back to sunlight as its primary energy source. So what this really means is that sunlight is the primary source of energy for all life on Earth. And that should raise our eyebrows if we haven't considered that light could impact our health. Not only does light impact our health, light is the very energy that makes it possible to even consider the concept of health. It's the very energy that makes it possible for life to even exist, to conceive anything. I'm not particularly religious. I'm a very spiritual person, but as the Bible says, the breath that God breathed in life, the light of the sun is the breath that God breathed into the dust of the earth and brought it to life. You know, that is what light effectively does for us. And so it's just at a foundational level, it's pretty important. Now, taking it a step further, another way to describe it is, let's just say God or the universe or evolution, whichever term someone prefers. For me, they're all synonyms, but whatever someone wants to use, you can use God, universe, evolution, whatever you like. So the universe, let's say, is like the painter. And the painter has a variety of colors with which to paint to bring its canvas to life. The canvas is the matter on the surface of the earth. The paint is the light and the different wavelengths coming from the sun, and the universe is the master that's making everything happen. So the different colors that the painter uses to bring a painting to life allow for there to be a variety of things occurring in the scene. It's not just all red or green or yellow. You know, it allows for there to be that really cool dance of variety that's going on in a painting. In the same way, the different colors, because the sun is made up of, it emits a lot of different wavelengths of light that we call colors. The ones we see, we call them colors. The other ones we can't see, we call them X-rays or infrared or ultraviolet or gamma rays, but they're all, we can consider them all like colors. And so the sun sends those colors to the earth. And then just like the painter paints on the canvas, those colors essentially are used by life to carry out certain functions. Now, this is fully rooted in scientific fact. It's a bit of a personification of what's exactly happening. Evolutionarily, it was really more of like a slow process. You know, certain colors and wavelengths affect certain processes and help certain things happen. And then as life evolves, it's really just the process of different wavelengths of light affecting and driving different biochemical and biological processes. But it's really important to know that just basic laws of physics, every atom, every molecule, which is a group of atoms, all have certain specific properties. It's how they interact with other atoms. It's what makes gold stay gold. And it's what makes, you know, different metals interact different ways, and what makes hydrogen and oxygen turn into water. Everything has different properties. And one of the properties of atoms and molecules is what wavelengths of light they absorb. And then when they absorb those, what wavelengths they re-emit after. And every atom, every molecule has these properties. And so what's kind of cool is that the matter that is on Earth can take different wavelengths of the sun and absorb it. And when we look into our biology, we can see there's a whole, life uses this. There's a whole bunch of different reactions where you have a certain chemical or a certain biomolecule, something in the body that's supposed to do something. And it actually has a sort of pair, a sort of, let's call it like a pen pal in the colors of the sun that actually affect it and allow it to carry out its process. And what that means is when I go out and I just lay in the sun and I sunbathe, I'm taking in a huge spectrum of different colors of different wavelengths. Even the blue range of light goes from on this the scale of light, it's measured in nanometers. So blue is about 500 to 580 nanometers approximately. And I'm sorry, take that back. It's 400 to 480. And there's so many wavelengths in there from 400 to 480. So all of these different wavelengths can have a different effect. Like for example, vitamin D synthesis is specifically 310 nanometers exactly. You know, so it's like one wavelength that's affecting cholesterol in the body and turning it into vitamin D. And it's really, really cool. What that means is when I go out and sunbathe, it's like a painter painting onto me all the colors, and every single reaction in my whole body is proceeding more effectively and efficiently, because the best way to summarize this whole thing is light didn't just happen to kind of show up at a convenient time. And it's like this thing that just kind of has this added benefit. No, like the light of the sun is the driving energy force for all life, which means it's the driving force, energy force for all of evolution too, all of evolution of life, advancement of life. So what it means is that step by step by step of light evolving, these wavelengths of light from the sun that are shining on the earth were always there, and they were always used when life evolved a new function to help that function proceed better. So when I sunbathe, I'm taking in everything, and it's making not just one or two or three things, vitamin D or this or that. It's literally every single process in the body. It doesn't mean that we use every single wavelength from the sun, but what it does mean is that effectively every single process that has evolved in the body is related to a wavelength of light from the sun. And we can get into more detail on some examples that are very relevant and profound and what those mean, but it's really a huge deal. And it's something like to illustrate the extent to which it's a huge deal, like imagine with how important that is, what I just described, like someone who never sees the sun is what we would call pale, colorless. Maybe their mood is dark. They're lacking in energy. You can feel it. You can see it. You know, people who look extremely, I would say, goth, emo, not to pick certain people out, but there's this absolute paleness and voidness of life that's there, versus someone, you know, versus someone who's full of color, full of light. And we use this as an expression in our language. He's full of color. You know, he's very bright. His eyes are sparkling. You know, it's part of our language. We understand intuitively when someone's full of beaming light. So that's how things started to evolve in my understanding and how light affects our physiology.
Yeah, somebody sent me a book a number of years ago when I kind of started getting into this space, called Circadian Code. I'm sure you, fascinating book. And I'm like, oh my God, this makes sense. So let's talk about real world examples. So vitamin D, I check vitamin D routinely in Nebraska because of the latitude of where we live. We have obviously a lack of light because it's cold outside and nobody wants to go outside when it's frigid and receive that light. But at the latitude we live, I see vitamin D levels tend to peak in Nebraska around August, September. And then here we are in February. I just checked a couple this week. I'm talking, people have vitamin D levels of 12, 16.
Oof. Ouch.
Yeah. So talk to people about, like, how does it work? How does, what could somebody do to raise their vitamin D level without taking vitamin D supplementation?
Yeah, exactly. I'm glad you say that. So first of all, vitamin D is a really important hormone. Actually, it's not exactly a vitamin, even though despite the name, that carries out a lot of really important processes in our body. And it's been in particular, you know, so it plays a role in our bone development. It plays a role in many, many different things. Cognition, it plays a role in the immune system function. Actually, it's one of the biggest ones, reducing inflammation. But going back to the immune system relevance of COVID, you know, that's just, it's an interesting thing that, of course, the whole thing seems to be blowing over and the media is focused elsewhere, but they'll bring it back when they need to. But just by going out in the sun and increasing our vitamin D levels, we can increase our innate immunity. It's just funny how supposedly intelligent governments never once talked about sunlight ever. Like it's just insane, to be honest, that's the state of affairs of the world, that the greatest ideas and thinkers are the least heard in certain respects. But that's changing with things like podcasts. So when we go out in the sun, like I said earlier, 310 nanometer light, UVB, ultraviolet B light, which is often demonized, we lay in the sun and it has huge benefits. And so there's a lot of evidence that taking supplemental vitamin D is not as good as taking the light of the sun. You know, for example, and I love it because a lot of my friends and people I know in the health world all send me amazing articles when new developments come out. But some of these things are, for example, that the primary ingredient in a lot of vitamin D supplements, cholecalciferol, is actually a primary ingredient in rat poison as well. So these things are not exactly friendly chemicals to the body. And they're also, you know, there's a distinction between fat-soluble and water-soluble vitamin D, and one is produced when we're sunbathing. The other is what we consume, for example, in our supplements, and they're not the same. And so it's the point of all this is really important for people to get out in the sun. This is just one example of a chemical, a hormone that has such an important impact in our body. And I recommend for people in general to listen to what their body's asking for and take really good holistic care of their health when it comes to sunlight. And I'll explain what I mean by that. So in the summer, we're able to synthesize a good amount of vitamin D, and it's actually stored throughout, you know, into the winter, which is pretty awesome. And that is how naturally, evolutionarily, you know, many Northern Europeans for thousands of years, of course, they didn't have vitamin D in the winter, but they're able to build up and store enough in the summer. And then, yes, their levels go down, but it's okay. But that only happens, of course, if we're out in the sun during the summer. It doesn't happen if we're indoors in an office all day. So it's really important for people, you know, I don't recommend supplementing with vitamin D. And I don't even think everyone needs to get like a UVB lamp. You can buy a UVB lamp called Sperti, S-P-E-R-T-I, and follow their dose instructions. It's like 5 minutes per day on each side, front and back of your body. But you don't even need to do that. And some, you know, I'm learning and researching more on this, but some would even lead me to believe, some researchers, that it can be beneficial to have periods where your body knows it's winter and you're not tricking it and saying, you know, take this UVB, and actually kind of getting into that natural rhythm if that's where you live. But the emphasis is that it's really important when the sun is there to get out. And then when it's cold, it's great to go out in the cold and take advantage of the health benefits, the kind of vitalization that cold offers. So to put it simply, get vitamin D in the summer by going out in the sun, and we can talk about healthy sunbathing practices. This is actually a great way to do it.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, like how long do they need to be out there? What do you think about sunscreens and things
like that? Great question. So before even sunscreen, I'll say sunglasses and contact lenses are the best thing to avoid. Contact lenses suffocate the eyes of oxygen, not fully, otherwise you wouldn't be able to see and the eye cells would all die, but it's subtly. So it's slowly over time, they reduce the amount of oxygen that can reach the cornea, and that causes hypoxia in the eyes, increase in inflammation and reactive oxygen species production, and ultimately a fast, rapid degradation of eyesight over time as well, which is why people who wear contacts, and I speak to people all the time, their prescription goes whoop as soon as they start wearing contacts. It's very fast.
What about LASIK, like LASIK eye surgery?
This one I have not been able to find really reliable data on
yet. I'm only asking because I've had it done.
Yeah. So I've heard some people who are maybe more jumping to conclusions without full.
I've seen some things circulating. Evidence. Yeah. Like
yeah. Some people say it's not
your eyes damaged and you can't receive the light. And
yeah. This I've heard also, I can't say for sure. Number one thing is that worrying about it definitely won't help. And so I'd say just continue as usual, going out in the sun, and just don't even think that it has a negative impact. And to be honest, it might not, because the mind is, that's another thing we could get into later, but the mind is much more powerful than we think. And that's been one of my most fascinating discoveries about inner light and the modulation of our inner light, which makes up who we are, how we think, and everything as well in our body. So best sunbathing practices. First of all, people are very different. Everyone's different. So this is like one case where there really is no one size fits all. It would be like saying, how much food do you need to eat? and what kind of food. You know, it'd be like, it'd really be like me giving like, okay, everyone should eat exactly at this time and this kind of food. And like Olympians and people who are sedentary, you know, same, it's impossible. The factors that influence, just so people can get an idea, that influence how much sun we need are first and foremost our skin tone. So your genetic skin tone, what you have in your genes. Secondly is your epigenetic skin tone. So what is present because of your current environment. So like genetic meaning like I'm Caucasian and no matter how much sun I get, I'm still going to be white more than likely. I might get pretty tan as I get healthier and healthier. It can get a deeper and deeper tan, but I'm probably never going to have an African level of melanin in my skin, you know, unless I'm able to work some serious magic. And same goes for someone who's African. They can get pretty pale, but they're probably never going to be fully Caucasian in their skin type. And this is for, you know, good reasons. People who evolve in Africa, if they didn't have so much melanin to dissipate the strong energy of the sun in their skin, they wouldn't be able to go hunting and survive in that heat, that hot environment. And concurrently, someone who's living in Northern Europe, it was a very beneficial adaptation to lose melanin because then you could assimilate far more light in a low light environment. So genetic skin tone and epigenetic skin tone is within my confines of my genes, how tan or pale am I? So if I'm really pale, like when I came from, as I mentioned before, 5 months, 6 months, I was just in Europe and I got to Costa Rica. I was like, I need to be really careful. I knew because if I just went out and sunbathed like I am today in the last few days, my first few days, I would have been a lobster in a lot of pain. And so I went really slowly. And what I thought was even just a little bit of sun, I was still a little bit more pink than I expected. So it showed me, wow, yeah, like you have to be really aware of that. That's that. And then from an end, that's on us. Another perspective, a really important factor is like, are you fasted or have you been eating? If you're full of food, you're not going to assimilate the light as well because your blood, which comes up to the surface of the skin to absorb light in a healthy way, and it fills all of our tissues to have this physiological oxygenation and benefits that happen when we get light. If it's all digesting food, like I can feel it 100%. Sunbathing while fasted for me is like, basically, I feel like I'm literally in heaven. I mean, it's the most spiritual, unbelievable experience ever. And full of food, I'm like, oh, I'm too hot. So that's another really big factor. And then outside of us, also another internal factor, I won't add this to the list, but just as a side note, is like, are you paying attention and present when you're sunbathing, like a massage, or are you on your phone? Because like I've definitively determined that if I'm doing something while sunbathing, so people can get an idea of like what to do and what not to do just from these points. When I'm sunbathing, if I'm on my phone or something, it's just like I'll get too hot and feel stressed because I'm trying to use blood and oxygen to run my brain. And so all the, just like trying to digest food, all the blood's in my brain trying to do stuff. And I'm just like trying to relax at the same time. It just doesn't work. And I end up getting overheated and stressed and not enjoying the sun at all. So that would be actually number four of our internal factors that affect us. That's genetic skin type, epigenetic, like our tan status, food or not, and are we focused on the sun or not? And then external factors, this is even greater in number, but I'll just kind of breeze through them. So first of all, it depends where you are on the earth. So like, are you on the equator or are you on, you know, in Nebraska? Second, it depends the time of year where you are on earth. So if you're on the equator, it's always going to be pretty strong sun. But if you're in Nebraska in the summer, it could be strong, but in the winter, it's not going to be strong. And then it depends on the time of day. Like if it's the morning, even on the equator, it's probably not going to burn you. But as the sun goes higher in the sky, the higher the sun goes, the less atmosphere it has to pass through. The less atmosphere it has to pass through, the stronger it is, the more ultraviolet is coming in as opposed to being filtered out. And so the later in the day, the higher the sun goes in the sky, the angle, that's why they say, and when you can't see your shadow gets shorter. It's because the sun's more overhead. You're more at risk of getting burnt because the sun's stronger. So you have to be more intelligent. So where on earth, time of year, time of day, and then of course, cloud cover. So what is the conditions of the sky? Is it a cloudy gray day? Then there's going to be less light, especially if it's thick clouds like the winter, there could be only 30% of the light, but still 30%, which is important to remember. It still has a huge impact on the body. People ask, what do I do if it's cloudy? Still go outside, just it might be cold, but there's still a lot of light to activate the body and it's very important. So cloud cover, or if you're on the equator or it's summer, but you have a thin haze, people think, oh, I'm totally cool. I can lay out. And then that's when you get cooked because the haze sometimes looks, it's like a magnifying glass and you can get burned, or you think it's not strong because you don't feel the heat, but you're getting cooked. So you have to be careful about the cloud conditions, the sky conditions. The best is a clear blue sky day for sure for sunbathing. And last but not least, elevation, altitude. Sky conditions, I'll go back. It actually can include the humidity of the air. So, and then last but not least, elevation. So are you at sea level or are you in the mountains? And then I guess I could add, but I would put this in sky conditions, clouds, humidity of the air, and air temperature. If it's cool, you can absorb more light because your skin stays cool without overheating. If it's hot, you're going to get really hot and overheat and feel like you got too much oftentimes. So four factors on our side that I identified here, five environmental factors. It means that there's a really big difference. But if I had to give people like a general prescription, for overall sun exposure, and I'll step away from sunbathing. The best thing I recommend everyone, and this is what I call the light diet. It's very simple. Share it with all your friends. I have a video course on rawoptics.com. You can Google the light diet course and you'll find it, that I go into a lot of detail on all these different things, what to do, what not to do. And I'm probably going to release a updated version of that in the next 6 months or so. But the most important thing for our body's circadian rhythm, so stepping aside from vitamin D and sunbathing, is just to get up and go outside as soon as you can, as close to sunrise as possible. So that means, like, if you can actually watch the sunrise because you live near big fields or like in the countryside, like maybe Nebraska, you have pretty broad horizons, cornfields and stuff. And if you have, but if you have skyscrapers, or if you have mountains, or you have, you know, something like that, you might not be able to see it. If you have lakes, or even if you live near, for example, I grew up in Philadelphia when I learned all this stuff, and it's Pennsylvania is named Penn's Woods. Sylvania is like woods. And there's a lot of trees, and it's very hard to find a good horizon for sun because there's so many tall trees everywhere. Like, I'd have to drive miles to get to like the edge of a riverside where there's a big cliff, and then I could see the sunrise. And I found bleachers at a stadium. It was a pretty good place if I really wanted to get a good sunrise and I was kind of trapped. Or your roof, just be careful, don't fall. That would defeat the purpose of getting healthier if you fell off your roof and died. So please, I mean that. People fall off the roofs a lot. You have to be really careful if you're going to go that route. So I don't advise that, actually. But it's really good if you can to get a place where you can get the sunrise and or sunset, but best if you can get both. But if you can only get one, like I'm on the Pacific coast of Costa Rica, so we really get a good sunset. Sunrise, there's mountains behind on right off the coast, so there's really not a great sunrise view unless I drive to the top of the hill, and it's not favorable for me for how I want to have a relaxed morning to get in the car every morning and drive up. So what I do is I just go outside and let the light, I see it reflecting off the clouds, reflecting on everything, and it still has a pretty strong stimulus, but I get the sunset every day as the opposite stimulus for the body's clock, and they both work really well. If you only could get one, I would get sunrise. Anyway, so if you can't see like a perfect sunrise and you can look at it directly for the first 15 to 20 minutes, again, depending on where you are on Earth, if you're on the equator, 15 to 20 minutes above the horizon maximum. But if you're in like Vermont or somewhere and you're far north or far south in the winter, the sun doesn't rise straight up. On the equator, when the sun comes up, it goes up. It just goes up and across the sky, which is why the days are only 12 hours and they're always the same throughout the year, because it goes up and over with a little variation, like up and over this side or this side or this side, but it's always up and over. If you are in far north of the equator or far south, the sun just comes up and grazes the horizon. And I had an extreme example of this in Norway. It literally would just trail the horizon for 2 or 3 hours. It would just come above the mountains and it would go right down for another 2 or 3 hours. The days were like 5, 6 hours, 7 hours of light at the most at this time in Norway. The sun would actually, like, first light, because it was just grazing the horizon, first light was like 2 hours before the sun actually rose. And the sun rose at like 10 in the morning, but it was a little bit light at 8:30. And then it rose, but it didn't peak more than, like, you know, very, very barely over the horizon. It would go back down. And so it was all day was golden hour. It was really cool, actually. But so in that case, you could basically sun gaze, look directly at the sun the whole day if it doesn't go over, you know, 10, 15 degrees above the horizon. So something like that. All that's to say, for common average person, make it really simple. When the sun comes up, as close to sunrise or first light as possible around sunrise, if you can witness the light for 10 to 15 minutes, I'd say like 15 every day, it will change your life in ways you could never imagine. It will open your mind to a whole new world of possibility. And it will, if you make it a spiritual experience and you assign a meaning to it, that this is actually setting your body, realigning it with the rhythms of nature, it will have a huge impact. And same with sunset. So that's one. Sunrise, same thing with sunset, almost identical treatment, except the opposite. It's the end of the day and it's getting the body to go to sleep rather than wake us up and turn on all of our hormones and neurotransmitters and all that stuff, which is what the sunrise does and morning sunlight. Now back to midday sunbathing. I would recommend, the reason I share these is because I recommend 15 minutes sunrise minimum, 15 minutes sunset minimum. I prefer an hour at both times because I can, you know, for me, sunrise, I'm often working, but facing towards the light. Sunset, I actually go to the beach and I walk for the last, you know, 30 to 60 minutes before the sun sets, and then another 30, 60 minutes after, and it's getting dark and the clouds are beautiful colors and everything. And then in the middle of the day, I recommend minimum like one in the summer, of course, because you can't do this really in the winter, most places, unless you're in Colorado. Then you actually can, where there's like, or Nebraska, maybe have clear blue skies some days in the winter, but any, you know, or Switzerland, places where you have clear blue skies, you can do this in the winter, but actually as close to the middle of the day as possible. And if you're in winter, this actually makes a big difference. If you go like 11, 12 or one, it'll make a big difference because the sun has a significant difference in its strength from that midday. You can Google search solar noon wherever you are, because it's not always 12 o'clock is the middle of the solar day. It's the midpoint between sunrise and sunset. And that's when the sun is the strongest. So go out at that time, sunbathe for, I like to say like 10 to 15 minutes on each side of the body, but it's so general that like, you can't do that if you're not, if your body's not prepared. If you're just getting started and you're super pale, no matter what time of year, I would start with 2 to 3 minutes maximum on each side of the body, max, in the middle of the day. And again, midday, if you're in a strong sunny place on the equator, the tropics, or it's summer and you're in Europe or North America, then the strong point would be approximately from 10 in the morning to 2 in the afternoon. If you're in Costa Rica and it's equatorial and the sun's coming overhead, really it's strong from like 8:30 until 3:30. It's really strong. So there's really a nuance to it. And I recommend everyone get the app DMinder on their phone. Any UV index of above like 4, 5, or 6, I would say is getting into strong. Anything below is relatively weak and very unlikely to cause any sort of burn. So I say 10 to 15 minutes because what I would do minimum is about 10 to 15 minutes on each side of my body in the middle of the day, in addition to the sunrise and sunset exposure. And they have different purposes. Sunrise and sunset sets the body's clock, sets our what they call chronobiology. It's our body's rhythms, all the timing. Imagine, for example, the fact that I just thought of this the other day. The body, well, first and foremost, we think about Amazon, like how many packages they have to ship every day, how many shipments need to get into one delivery center or transitory center, and then have to go out. And all the timing has to be perfect, that everything can work and function. And it's pretty robust. Now think that the human body has 100 trillion cells approximately, each of which has about 1,000 mitochondria, cellular engines, which means we have a lot of mitochondria. 1,000 times 100 trillion. It's quite a lot. And all of these are dependent on this time system. So our body actually is far more complex than all of Amazon's fulfillment all around the world, the whole world included. It's a lot more in our single body. So that just illustrates, it should illustrate how important it is to have this timing. And that's why sunrise and sunset are important. Now the midday sun plays a bit of a different role. It also sets our body's clock to know it's the middle of the day, but this is when we can absorb all these different colors and wavelengths I was talking about to make vitamin D, to increase nitric oxide release in our blood vessels and cause our blood to flow really freely, decrease our heart rate naturally, relax us, improve oxygenation in the blood, improve the function of all of our cellular engines, of all of our mitochondria by powering them up with healthy light. So for me, I actually aim for like 2 midday sunbathing sessions. Usually I'll go around like, I mean, I get light all day. So I get the morning light when it's coming up. Then I'll go after some hours of working, I'll go surf and I'll get some more hours of mid-morning light. And then I'll, you know, go work, do my routine again, whatever, have lunch. work more, and then I'll have my afternoon sunbathing session. I really like it around 2:30, between 2:30 and 4 p.m. here specifically. It's very different if you're elsewhere, but here 2:30 to 4 p.m., the sun is still very strong, but not going to burn me as much, but it's very warm. And I actually sweat buckets. It's like my sauna session every day, just laying in the sun. Now, most places 2:30 to 4 in the afternoon, if you're in America or Europe, it's not going to be very strong. But so it just depends where you are. All back to what I was saying in the beginning, I recommend people, you use your feeling. You feel, okay, I'm going to get minimum 10 to 20 minutes in the morning, 10 to 20 minutes in the evening, and then I'm going to start sunbathing in the middle of the day. And if it's winter, what I do is I just try to go for minimum 1 hour walk every day, even if you have to bundle up. That's, you just need the light, especially on your eyes and your face, but eyes especially is most important. That's why I said no contacts, no sunglasses, glasses better off as well if you can while you walk. And that's like a really, I would say that I'm glad we're talking about this because I haven't done a full like run through of all this on a podcast in a while. This is like a very sensible approach, especially the 2 to 3 minute increase. And the best thing you can do is if you're in winter, which most Americans are, just start when the sun starts coming out, just start going out for like 10, 15, 20 minutes. You know, don't worry too much about burning, but also don't burn, you know, like just if your skin gets pink, that means there's blood flow coming to the surface. Doesn't mean you're burnt. If it stays pink and it hurts, then you're burnt. And it means you got too much. You need to take a couple days off till it heals. That does, you don't
what
keep
if people
going
are doing. What if it's not winter, it's summer, you're going to an event, it's outdoors all day. You are going to be out there all day. What is that, when you should use sunscreens or when you should use more clothing or when you should wear sunglasses? I mean, are there times that are appropriate for that? Or
yeah, so there are times that it's appropriate to protect yourself from sunlight. As far as wearing sunscreen, yes as well, but not the kind that most people wear. So yeah. Most sunscreen is full of chemicals, which was awesomely showed off by this year's massive recall of sunscreens containing benzene, which is carcinogenic. And people have been talking about it for years, much more intelligent and much more experienced in this than myself, that this is harmful and many other chemicals in sunscreen, not just benzene. But they had a massive recall, which was just like a huge win for the light diet, you know, teaching people like, okay, you know, we're onto something here. And so what happens is these carcinogenic chemicals, they become, when you expose certain chemicals to ultraviolet radiation, they can become more harmful, more carcinogenic. They basically, it knocks off the electrons from the chemicals, which, and then they're basically, they want to go find more electrons that have been knocked off. So they're basically stealing electrons from our cells. And we call these like free radical chemicals or just really damaging chemicals. And they're not good. And they're absorbing into our bloodstream when we put them on. So that's why the sunscreen doesn't, you don't see it because it absorbs in your bloodstream. So I use a mineral-based sunscreen that I use when I surf and I'm out there for hours. I think I might have it right here. Huge shout out. This is called Monda. It's a cool company. And there's many of these. Surfers wear them. And the distinctive factor, this one smells like chocolate. It's awesome. But the distinctive factor, you don't put it all over your body. It's that when you put it on your skin, it doesn't absorb in your blood. So I'll just leave this on for the purposes. So when I go surfing, I just throw this on and I do some under my eyes, like the places that are most prone to get burnt. And only if I'm out surfing later in a time where I'm potentially going to get burnt. Now I'm going to look like a clown for the rest of this interview, but it's fine. So that's what I would do. And so the reason I share this is it's not all sunscreens are bad, but I wouldn't use any normal sunscreens. I would only use ones that are like the one, most people don't want to use these because you see it doesn't look attractive, but like this is the only one I would use. What would I use instead? I would wear a hat. Like I use this because I don't want to wear a hat when I'm surfing because I'll lose my hat. So if I go out really late surfing, I'll put on like a rash guard, like a shirt that's, you know, whatever polyester and going to block the sun. I don't like polyester clothing. I usually prefer cotton, but cotton isn't going to, it's going to get super heavy and wet and it's not going to really block much sun. So that's the trade-off. Occasionally if I go out and it's the middle of the day, usually I don't go out in the middle of the day because here it's so strong that the backs of my calves will get fried and I'm not going to wear a full body suit because then I'll die of overheating. So like, it's just, it's just like, you can't win unless you have dark skin, which is why it's cool to have dark skin sometimes, you know, like it's just, everyone has their own advantages and in a good way. And we should play to our strengths. And so yeah, it's so funny. Anything you say can get really taken out of context. So I hope people don't take that out of context, but, Anyway, so it's always cool to have whatever skin type you have 100% of the time. So anyway,
own it, learn your own biology.
Yeah.
So there are some times that you should wear it.
Yes. I would just add, clothing is the best, like physical protection. Put on a hat, big bucket hat, a sombrero, like look super cool, whatever you got to do. And, you know, wear a shirt, wear a long sleeve shirt if you have to. Like, you know, if you're going on a vacation down to Mexico in the middle of the winter, like that's when I would really follow this like slow buildup. Now, you might not want to just do 2 to 3 minutes, but you might just do 10, 15 minutes on each side of the body. The cool thing everyone should remember is this: in the summer, when the sun is much stronger, even in the summer or in the tropics, you can hang out in the morning sunlight for like the first 2 hours after the sun comes up and probably not get burnt at all. And same 2 hours before sunset, like you're good. 30 minutes, like depends on where you are, but like even in the strongest sun, which is where I am right now, effectively, it's first hour, hour and a half, you're definitely not going to get burnt, almost no matter how pale you are. With caveats, if you're extremely unhealthily pale, you might only want to stay for the first 30 minutes. But like most people, 1 to 1.5 hours after sunrise and before sunset, you're good and you're good. And you can just take that light. And that's super healing because it's lower in the ultraviolet and the blue wavelengths, which while also super beneficial in many ways, and we can talk about how it was wrong that ultraviolet got demonized and they say it causes skin cancer later.
Well, yeah, I was just about to ask about tanning.
Yeah, let's get into that. But the sun, because think of it like this way. The earth is like a big globe wherever you are. When the sun comes from the sunrise or sunset on the horizon, it's passing through more atmosphere. So if my head were the earth, let's say, and then the sun is my hand over here, like the sun, if I'm standing here on the top of my head, when the sun's beaming this way, there's a lot more atmosphere. Imagine the atmosphere is like an aura around my head. So this, I don't know any better way to explain this right now, but the sun beams in, and as it reaches me standing here on the top of my head on the earth, it's passing through more layers of atmosphere. Now, as the earth rotates and the sun is overhead, there's actually less atmosphere. So it's going to burn you more. So the point is, like, the higher energy wavelengths, ultraviolet, blue, et cetera, those are filtered out the further the sun goes to the horizon, which is why the sun looks more orange in the evenings and the mornings. It's because the blue light is filtered out. And so it has more reds, oranges, and yellow proportionately. It looks really good for photos, for photography. They call it golden hour. And so that is like super healing. Like get as much of that as you can. Again, I'm just going to throw out a general recommendation with the caveat that it depends 100% where you are on earth, but in the summer or in a strong sun place, first 30 to 90 minutes, take the sun in, and last 30 to 90 minutes, take it in. The time to be really careful is again, in those midday hours, whether between 9 and 3 or 10 and 2, or even 11 and 1, where you are, if it's the winter, being careful there. And I would wear a shirt. I would wear hat, and that's it. And then you're good. And you don't have to deal with chemical sunscreens. And yes, there's the vanity, like, you know, maybe girls or guys, they want to show off their six pack and their body parts and everything. And that's totally cool. But like, better you just don't cover yourself in chemical sunscreen. Better you earn it by building up a healthy level of melanin in your skin. Melanin is our body's natural sunscreen. Melanin is an extremely important molecule that takes high energy light, absorbs it, and dissipates it as heat, which can be beneficial for our body. And it is something that the body's designed to make. If you wear sunglasses, you block the stimulus on the eye that stimulates the brain to make more melanin. And that becomes problematic too. So that's another reason not to wear sunglasses. It tricks our brain that it's not actually as bright as it is and as strong as it is. And so you're actually more prone to burning and so on.
Okay. Yeah. So talk about like tanning beds and UV. We were going to go there.
Yeah, let's go there. So UV light has huge therapeutic benefits. One of them being UVB, making the synthesis of vitamin D. Ultraviolet A has a variety of benefits as well, but they're both demonized and linked to aging, wrinkles, skin cancer, and so on, which can be true if you get too much too quickly and you're constantly burning yourself. Yeah. But if you don't, if you build up your exposure slowly, like I'm recommending here, then you can benefit. It's like anything that can be too much can be harmful, but but just the right amount can be perfect. You know, too much water is harmful. Just the right amount's great. So if you build up your natural melanin levels, your natural tan without burning too much or at all, and then you can go out in the sun for hours and charge up, not burn, you'll feel amazing and you'll look amazing. Your skin will be tan, your eyes will sparkle, and people will say, wow, you look great, you know, for sure. And that's what happens when you have a healthy tan. And to have a healthy tan, you have to have a healthy lifestyle, because people who are really unhealthy typically don't tan. They typically just burn. So that's a separate discussion. But so tanning beds can actually be used beneficially, yes, even in the winter. Again, it just depends. Do you want to just follow the flow of the seasons and get the sun in the summer and not use the artificial light? That's something I'm also developing my perspectives on right now. You can experiment with it, see how you feel, you know, see if you feel a big benefit. Usually people will, especially if they're vitamin D deficient. But if you follow the regulations and the general recommendations of how much to use, the odds of getting burnt are virtually zero. If you do what they know what they're doing at these tanning salons. They actually know the health benefits of ultraviolet light, you know, and they've been demonized by medical industries based on selling more sunscreen and dermatology experts based, you know, demonizing the sun and demonizing the very creator of life. So it's very misguided. So yeah. People can use their own judgment.
I use tanning beds off and on, but people are like, oh wait, but you're a doctor. Like that's going to cause melanoma. Yeah. So I love having this conversation. Okay. So I want to make sure we get this in for everybody on YouTube. I can see these glasses. Matt sent me these last year sometime. I have tried lots of blue blockers. I did a story recently, Matt, and I want you to touch on it too, because I feel like blue blockers are becoming very gimmicky and they're not all created equal. So the message you guys need to hear is get light during the day. We're supposed to get light, but then at night we need to block it so that we can sleep really good. And these things, these puppies will put me to sleep like in 30 minutes. I'm not even kidding. I can't even wear them very long. I'm like, I gotta go lay down. So tell people what these glasses are, Raw Optics, and how to, obviously they should go by yours, but how do they decipher out there? Like, what is a legitimate product?
Of course. Yeah. So great that we focused. And this is why I started this and why I love to do it. I love to talk about the sun and why it's good. You know, like I don't go on podcasts to pitch my products. I just go on to teach, and that's what I really love. So yes, in the same way that the sun is really important during the day, darkness is the time when, as a living organism, we evolve this ability to repair and sleep. And I should correct myself. Actually, sleep is more than likely our primordial state from which we evolved. You know, life was sleeping, quote unquote, just kind of in a semi-active or active more and active less when the light was out and not out respectively state, but we wouldn't have considered it waking. You know, if you look at bacteria, you wouldn't really consider them like awake or asleep. They just kind of exist and function, and maybe they're more active on a cellular level when you look closely through a microscope during the daylight hours and less at night, depending on the type of bacteria or organism. You get the idea. So at night, that's the time when we retained our inactive, like we basically become like giant lumps of bacteria. We just go into sort of like it's a pretty interesting concept when you really think about sleep. Like we go into like a coma state. Like we just completely, not exactly a coma, of course, like in the medical sense, but like we are completely out. But
depending on stage, I mean, you're like, your muscles are actually paralyzed. Yeah. Like, or
yeah, exactly. You really are, you know. And I'm not exactly a sleep expert. I'm more knowledgeable in the field of how light affects our sleep, but it's a pretty cool concept that we go out, our brainwaves slow down and we're out and our cells are just in full repair mode. And light as the waking state, it's worth talking about wakefulness for just a moment. Like wakefulness is what we consider conscious wakefulness, the ability to move and go out and do things. This was again evolved and it is powered by light. There are some animals that are conscious and awake at night, nocturnal animals. And this is, of course, physiologically possible. But I would argue that the most complex animals are bound to be diurnal, because with more energy from the sun, you're able to build a more complex system. So the level of complexity that a nocturnal animal can reach is I would say, limited. But humans, of course, were diurnal, so meaning opposite of nocturnal, awake during the day. And so that's the light. The light is like a force that propels us out of sleep. It's like, get out of your bed and go and wake up and be active, because we've built this system where we have a complex brain and we can go forage for nutrients and do all the things that a living organism would do to ensure its survival.
We're solar powered.
We're solar powered 100,000% over. Yeah, 100 million percent. And the level to which that is true is in almost astounding. There's researchers who have found that literally melanin, and multiple researchers, that melanin basically breaks the melanin, absorbs sunlight and splits water and turns water in our cells into a battery, actually. And there's a researcher, Gerald Pollack, who's like working, basically now a Nobel laureate, who's discovered that water in our cells is like a battery. It splits OH and H and it stores sunlight energy like a battery that our cells can use for energy. And this is really where energy comes from, not just from our food. It's food is, some experts say, only 30% of actually the total amount of energy our cells use. And the balance would be from light. Now, if you don't get light, that says you're functioning at a way lower level than you can and should be, which is why this fascinated me. But so about sleep then, sleep is sort of the time we really need to like take care of ourselves. Now, we don't necessarily need a ton of sleep. I've actually been blessed to come across some really cool yogis, like really advanced people who are, it's more of an ancient esoteric tradition, true yoga, not just the stuff people are doing at the yoga studio, stretching and everything, but true yoga, the pursuit of unity with the universe. And these yogis I know, close friend of mine in particular, he only needs to sleep 4 or 5 hours a night because his body is in such a state of balance. And he's an Ironman triathlete. He's not like some guy who's just chilling on his computer all day. Like, he is a high level specimen. His labs, his blood, everything looks great. He's very dialed in, and he only needs to sleep 4 or 5 hours a night. And he explained to me, like, the highest level functioning people, the masters, they call them, they could do with less sleep. Now, for most people, you need at least 8 hours. The sickest people, even if you get 10 hours, you're still going to feel probably pretty bad. But so sleep happens in darkness. And what that means is, if we're constantly using artificial light, because what artificial light was created to do was to extend productivity of workers in particular. And, one of its functions also to replace, a cool invention to replace gas-powered lamps. But it could extend workers' productivity by giving an extra stimulus to keep them awake. But we should ask the question, is that really good for us? Like, is that actually something that is beneficial, to steal from our, it's like burning the candle on both ends, really is exactly what it is. It's stealing from our time to repair in favor of more production. So yes, you're going to maybe be able to get more done in a day, but because you don't have the solar power when you have a light bulb that's stimulating you to stay awake, you don't have the full power of the sun, and you're taking away from your time to repair, I would argue that really what you're doing is you're stealing from the end of your life. You're stealing lifespan, health span, to in favor of the present moment. So it's like I think what people would call high time preference, putting the present over the long term. So overall, artificial light at night to extend our waking hours and activity is just not a good move. It's not a smart move. And we can see the effects of this. Chronic artificial light exposure at night has been linked to increase in a huge amount of health issues, diabetes, obesity, heart disease, cancer. Now it's really exploding the research in a really interesting way. And so what that means, to put it really simple, is all we need to do is just stop using so much bright light at night. Replace our light bulbs with candlelight, with firelight, or with amber or red bulbs, like even just incandescent, if they're still legal where you live, which they are in most places, but not California and Hawaii and more places. But get incandescent light bulbs that are warmer, lower color temperature, they call it in these lighting language, and almost red or orange. And those will just disrupt your sleep significantly less. For those, we're at Ra, we're in the process of building the best lighting in the world. for people to have. It's going to take some time though. So I found a really cool company not long ago called Waveform Lighting. For those who are really interested in retrofitting their house with great quality lights, Waveform Lighting would be a really great place to look and just see if it interests you. Yeah, of course, they're more expensive than regular bulbs, but also know that we're going to have a much better solution probably within about a year for everyone to have for their lighting. That's really, really cool. So this is stuff we can do, but just to make it really easy, like friends of mine, what they did, they went to IKEA and bought a lot of candles, and all they use at night are candles. Yes, they go through a decent amount of candles, but the benefits they're getting to their health, the ambiance they've created in their life at night, it is a huge difference. Like people have problems putting their kids to sleep, but they're wiring them up with the crack, which is artificial bright blue light and screens into the evening. And so they're wondering why their kids can't sleep. It's because they're giving them basically crack before bed. And it's like, that's how it works. Now, of course, I'm exaggerating with the crack analogy, but it's what it is for children, these screens and light bulb, bright lights. So how can we also remedy that in the modern world? To get to the question about the glasses, there's a very simple solution. I was using these things called blue light blocking glasses, but all of them were either A, super ugly and maybe blocking the right wavelengths, or B, attractive styles, but with these clear lenses that didn't block any of the meaningful lights. In order for a lens to block a meaningful amount of blue light, it has a similar effect to what the atmosphere has on the sun. The sun becomes more and more orange, yellow, orange, and red as it goes down on the horizon. That's why our lenses have a yellow and orange and red color, because they are blocking and filtering out blue light wavelengths. And so the reason we would use these yellow lenses during the day, actually, you know, I'll start with night because it makes more sense. At night, you slap these babies on, they block harmful blue light wavelengths, and you sleep really well. But the most important effect for those who maybe don't care about sleep even, is just you chill out, you feel more relaxed. And maybe if you're like me, the tendency to want to have like a glass of wine or something to just chill out, or taking melatonin or sleeping pills, all the things that people are trying to do today to remedy the problem that they don't even know exists become unnecessary. You don't need alcohol anymore. You don't need weed. You don't need sleeping pills. You don't need melatonin. You just put on the glasses and your body's able to relax naturally or freely use candles instead, you know, but the glasses are really helpful when you go out at night. Now, for daytime, the other really great benefit is if you're in an office or a school. I was in high school when I was learning about this, and the lighting was so abrasive. And now a little blue light from these sources is okay during the day. A lot of blue light from the sun is also fine and really good during the day, but these indoor lights, they have this issue with what's called flicker, where they're constantly going on and off because the power grid, it's called alternating current, and it's going on and off 60 times per second. And so the lights are flickering at that rate unless they're incandescent, and it causes problems in the brain. It causes stress response. It can cause migraine, headaches, which is an experience I had. So because these lights are so deficient in their color spectrum, it's like a drug. It's like the sun is a big, healthy, full spectrum source, like a food that contains a broad variety of vitamins and minerals, or like a multivitamin. These lights that we're using, LEDs and fluorescents, the energy efficient ones, which are actually horrible for our health, they are very, very stressful for our bodies. And so that's why I realized we need an indoor solution during the day. So these are called screen lenses, implying you might use them when you're on a screen. You might use them when you're in an office. Now, again, I'm not using them right now on this screen because I have a huge I have a massive, an ocean view and a massive metal roof, aluminum
roof. You've got a better view than me.
Yeah, there's a view of the ocean, but then there's a big metal roof of the other part of the place, which is down the stairs, that I'm getting a lot of good sun. So it looks good because it makes the video look good because I have full spectrum illumination on me from this aluminum roof. But I have the full spectrum of the sun, so it outweighs the negative effects of a screen. And super life hack, I have a software called Iris that I put on my screen when I do want to block out that high energy blue. And you'll start to feel, wow, this, when you start using Iris and making it warmer, the screen, make it a little more yellow, play with the settings, put it on health mode, sleep mode, go in manually and adjust the blue light. And I can feel when I want the color to be warmer. And like now I turned off the Iris because the sun is so bright. If I put on the filter, I won't even be able to see you because the sun is so bright. So Iris software for your computer, it's either free or cheap, very cheap. There's different levels
what about
you can
for
get.
The smartphone?
For the smartphone, there's a hack on your phone called color filters. I am super due to make a new video and post this on YouTube. I'm actually going to do that. But you can Google search how to make your iPhone screen red. And there's a million videos about how to do it and how to set it so it's a triple click accessibility shortcut on your home button. So you do 1, 2, 3. In fact, you know, let me just demonstrate.
Somebody did it to my phone and I have it now. And
I've never done this on
because
go ahead.
When I take pictures now, it like looks funny on my phone, you know, like, you know, because people use filters and stuff. And, but yeah, I have it. Somebody did it to my phone. They showed me how. I didn't realize how. So yeah, you should make a video and show people.
So I'll make a video and I'll post it, but I've been due to do that for a while, but that's a really simple thing is color filters for your phone. But again, the glasses become most useful. And I'm toying with modifying the names again to suit the purposes better, because you can use software on your screen. So you don't even need the glasses for your screen unless you work at a company or something that, you know, doesn't let you put the software that you want, like the school where I was. But the biggest use is for the artificial light, the LEDs and the fluorescent lights in the schools. That's why they're called at a fundamental level, blue light protection glasses. But really a better way to think of them is just chill glasses. They just calm everything down, chill glasses for day, chill glasses for night. And they basically just calm everything down and make everything much more enjoyable when you are inside an office or a floor. Like my girlfriend, when I first met her and she was just learning about this stuff, she put these on when we were traveling, we were getting COVID tests, and we were in this one clinic with the worst bright white fluorescent lighting. And she put these on and it was like, whoa, now I understand why these are so important. Like you can feel the huge benefit. Mm-hmm. So again, chill glasses for day, they're called screen lenses on our website. Chill glasses for night, they're called sleep lenses on our website. And that's really what Raw Optics does. That's rawoptics.com. So when you use these, you chill out and you just feel more relaxed and you just feel better. But then as a result, during the day, you'll have more energy. Like you can have a more balanced energy state. That's what the benefit of the yellow is for the day. And then the red, they're not going to give you more energy. You're going to just fall asleep, but then you're going to wake up with more energy. I have reviews on our website. It's amazing. People who literally used to take 4 hours to fall asleep, they couldn't fall asleep, and now they fall asleep in 30 minutes. People used to take an hour to fall asleep, they fall asleep in a minute. They say, my head hits the pillow and I'm out. I don't remember anything. People whose autoimmune diseases are healing faster because their cells are now repairing faster because their brain's making the melatonin it's supposed to be because they're blocking blue light at night using the glasses, or because they took the advice of the light diet and decided to just change all their lights and use candles at night. So, you know, if we had to really simplify everything here, the light diet, into what do you do and what does it do for you? What you do is you wake up in the morning, put a big smile on your face, get morning sunlight. So the big smile is actually a really important part of the light diet. And we can touch on that if you have some more time and you want to go a little deeper,
whole second episode.
Let's do it. So we'll do a separate episode for that. And that'll be really interesting. But so I recommend if you're listening to this, tune in for that whenever it happens. But for this purpose, so one, put a smile on your face, which is another way of saying cultivate your inner light, which is a step of the light diet. And that's first thing in the morning. Second, go out and watch the sunrise or expose yourself to morning sunlight for at least 15 minutes. That's step two. Step three, go outside during the day and sunbathe or expose yourself to midday sunlight in whatever capacity makes the most sense for you. If it's the winter and it's an hour long walk, great. If it's 15, 20, 30 minutes in the middle of the day sunbathing, or even an hour if you're super dark and you're just ready to go, then that's it. So sunbathe as necessary for your body in the middle of the day. We didn't talk much about food because that's really not the goal and the focus here. But in general, it's most important to eat with the sun. So I would just say eat with the sun would be step four. And I'm kind of constantly revising the steps of the light diet because it's evolving. But eat with the sun is very important, meaning don't eat too much food like too early in the morning. You know, like the biggest meal of the day is best to be lunch. Our culture has it all backwards. It's big dinner late at night. It should be a big lunch around noon when the sun is strongest and our metabolism is the most active. We can burn through that food and go to sleep with an empty stomach and then wake up totally fresh in the morning. So if we eat a big meal late at night, this is much, much more important. And we don't have enough time necessarily to get deep into it. But to put it simply, if you eat a huge meal late at night before bed, it's your body's busy trying to digest it, so your cells can't repair. And really, it's true. And so you wake up and you'll feel sluggish and heavy. And I feel this. It's a day-to-day thing. Like if I eat too much food later in the afternoon, I don't wake up as I want to early, super fresh. And I learned this from the yogis, actually. This is ancient knowledge they've known for thousands of years, which was also known by the circadian rhythm researchers like Sachin Panda and the Circadian Code. He talks about don't eat late at night, don't eat big meals. The best circadian rhythm researchers, they don't even eat after, some of them, they don't eat after 3 p.m. because they saw the science, just like the yogis. And the yogi, my friend, he taught me the same thing. You know, eat a solid breakfast, big lunch, and a light dinner, 3, 4, 5 p.m., you snack in there if you need to, and don't eat something super heavy at, you know, big steaks and stuff in the evening or late in the day, because then the body's digesting that for many, many hours. And so if you don't eat big meals late in the day, you can actually get onto this yogi schedule, which I've started to experience, which is waking up 4 in the morning. I've had days where I woke up at 3:30 in the morning or 3 in the morning, ready to go, because I didn't eat huge meal late. I went to sleep around 8 or 9. My body only needed 6 hours, and I woke up fresh, light, meditated, and got a bunch of work done. And this is how this friend of mine lives. He's a physician as well. And in Russia, he's very influential over there, but basically in this space. But you know, he's up every day at 3:30 in the morning. And by the time the sun comes up, he's already done his meditation, his practices, his work. He's going to surf, and he has the whole day. It's like playing with house money when you do everything before the sun rises or just early in the morning. But that's what we are made for. I mean, there's also a caveat there from the yogi perspective. We should respect the difference between masculine and feminine energy. Like the masculine energy in that tradition, they believe is meant to go out and produce and work really hard and do all this stuff. And the feminine energy, it's actually better to take it easy and relax, and that's more beneficial for feminine energy system. So it doesn't mean don't pursue your mission and goals and dreams, but it just means allow it to be more like an art than a going. Men benefit, they say, from discipline and stress. And for women, it's better to just be like a dancer with life, so to speak. So anyway, eat with the sun. And this is just one perspective, of course, but one that I think is very accurate. And then the fifth is, so you eat with the sun. The fifth would be watch the sunset and let the sun going down set your brain and get ready into the evening time, and then throw on your blue light blocking glasses at night if you're going to be exposed to bright lights, or just have your house be dark. So that step five would be just let the descending light of the sun lead you into sleep. And I watch the sunset. It sets here in Costa Rica around 5:45 in the evening. First light's around 5 o'clock in the morning every day. So it's about a 12-hour day. And sun goes down at 5:45, dark by 6:30. I'm in bed by 7:30, 8, and I'm reading, and I go to sleep like 8 last night. And some people say 8, that's so early, but it's no, the sun's down 2 hours. I want to be up at 4 in the morning, 3 in the morning, 5 in the morning, crushing it, ready to crush my day. And people, anyone who really gets this and wants to get into this rhythm, you will feel massively accomplished if you allow your body, if you eat light in the afternoon, and it takes discipline, you eat light later in the day, you wake up earlier, you're following the circadian rhythm. If you're training, don't train too hard in the afternoon. That's another thing. I didn't even talk about that, but it disrupts our body. If you train super hard in the evening, especially, it'll mess the system up. Do it in the morning, first half of the day, the body's more primed and you'll get a bigger benefit rather than stressing out a tired body at the end of the day. But if you do this and you get into this rhythm, it's naturally aligning. It's an intelligent way to live, because you're aligning our activity with the body's peak function. Like our brain function is the sharpest between 4 and 6 a.m. It's like, but most people aren't even awake. Why? Well, because all of our circadian rhythms are constantly disrupted. We're designed to be waking up pretty early, but we eat late as a society when the sun's gone. Our appetite should be gone, but it's not, because we're stimulating ourselves with these lights. Blue light at night, guess what it also does? It makes people crave sugar and carbs, those late night carb cravings. That's an easy way to cut them, is just by going dark.
Yep. I love it. Okay, so Matt, I typically end all my podcasts with something called the semen analysis, and I pulled this awesome article on infrared and near infrared light, but we could spend an entire podcast on it because we have so many other topics to touch. So I just want to summarize you guys. Go check out Matt's work, The Light Diet. It's incredible. It's a whole new way of thinking, a new way of living. But I promise you, I have incorporated a lot of these things into my, schedule out of my life. And it truly, truly, truly works. I'm trying to get brave enough to wear these to a C-section at 3 a.m. because that is like the blue lights at the hospital at 2 a.m. If I have to deliver a baby, it's like poison to my eyes. And it messes me up for pretty much 2 days after that, if it happens. So go check out, tell people what the website is to go look at these.
It's Ra, R-A, like the Egyptian god of sunlight, optics, which is a synonym, sunlight, Ra optics, raoptics.com.
RAoptics.com. Go check it out. Get yourself some glasses. Start wearing them. I love that you use the word chill because that's pretty much what they make me feel like when I wear these in the evenings. And when you first put them on, you feel like I can't do anything, like I can't function. But then after a couple minutes, you're good. I mean, I can still, do stuff around the kitchen, around the house with my kids, put my kids to bed, those kind of things. So
yeah. And we can touch next time on why they're designed to actually make things really easy. Like we didn't get into it so much this time, but next call we can. But basically I work with the world's leading experts. We get the highest quality materials, Italian acetate, German metal. We work with, for the lenses, that's for the frames, for the lenses themselves. We work with the world's leading scientists in lens development to put in the exact right pigments, where you have this perfect balance of blocking all of the harmful wavelengths of light, but allowing in the light that is okay and safe and beneficial. Too much of any light, even red at night, which red has the least impact on this side of the spectrum, whereas blue has the most on our circadian rhythm. Even too much red can disrupt your sleep, but we make that trade-off. We let in all the light that doesn't have a significant impact on our circadian rhythm, blocking what does, so protecting our body's rhythm. And specifically the lens pigment we use, it's a synthetic version of the body's natural pigment melanin that I spoke about in pretty strong depth on this show. And we also have melanin in our eye. It's what gives our eyes their colors, whether blue or green or brown. And the melanin allows our brain in these lenses to have a relatively accurate color perception of what's there. So once your eyes adjust and your brain understands, your brain actually sort of forgets about the other colors and it recalibrates with what's left. And this occurs with using these lenses. They have a very smooth and nice spectral transmission. And so that's just why they're basically so amazing and they work so, so well. But it's just like if you only had the colors of fire around you, if you just cut out all the blues and greens and all you had are the yellows, oranges, and reds, when you put the lenses on, that's effectively what happens.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Well, Matt, this has been good. We're going to have a part two because we have way too many other things that we have got to talk about. But thank you for your time. I'm jealous you're in Costa Rica. I'm going to have to come down there. You, Paul, all the people are living down in Costa Rica.
Yeah,
right now.
Yeah. I see Paul all the time surfing.
Are you near Great Paul? Guy.
Hmm?
Are you guys near each other?
Yeah.
You and Paul.
Yeah. Fun. Yeah, he's a great guy. I love Paul.
Good. All right, you guys. Well, thanks for listening to the Fit and Fabulous podcast. Make sure you leave us your reviews, download this episode, share it with anybody. Go check out raoptics.com and The Light Diet. Thanks, Matt, so much.
Thank you, Jane.